You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 28th, 2026. While there's been much speculation, both here in Canada and elsewhere, regarding recent remarks by Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney at the Davos World Economic Forum last week. Addressing the global business elite, Carney played harbinger of doom, announcing a rupture in the world order and declaring the useful fiction of values like respect for human rights, sustainable development, solidarity, sovereignty, and territorial integrity of the various states dead. Killed, it's implied, by America's new imperial self-understanding. But does Carney's lament signal a fundamentally shifted strategic posture so long in lockstep with the U.S.? And if so, where's the proof of Canada's newfound value-based realism? My first guest's recent article, Canada Follows U.S. Lead in Preparing for World War, beggars belief in the Prime Minister's much-celebrated sudden Damascene conversion. Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov is contributing managing editor to Covert Action magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden, and his latest, co-authored with Dan Kowalik, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Jeremy Kuzmarov in the first half, and Mark Carney's call for middle power solidarity in the face of America's unhinged hegemonic impulses carries with it implicit caveats, the most glaring of those made apparent in the aftermath of the lethal kidnapping raid against Caracas and Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro. When first made aware of the clearly illegal attack against that country's sovereignty and the person of the president, Carney responded saying, quote, Canada has not recognized the illegitimate regime of Nicolas Maduro since it stole the 2018 election, adding, the Canadian government therefore welcomes the opportunity for freedom, democracy, peace, and prosperity for the Venezuelan people. A brave new order indeed. Chris Gilbert is professor of political studies at the Universidad Bolivariana de Venezuela in Caracas. He's too an author and contributing editor at Monthly Review and co-hosts the Marxist educational program Escuela de Cuatros. Gilbert's latest book is Commune or Nothing, Venezuela's Communal Movement and Its Socialist Project. Chris Gilbert in the second half. But first, Jeremy Kuzmarov and America's Willing Coalition mobilizing at the gates of World War III. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Great to be with you, as usual.
Well, it's always great to speak with you. Jeremy, your article was written the day before Carney's much ballyhooed speech to the 0.0001% of the 1% in Switzerland last week. So you can be forgiven, Jeremy, for having gotten everything 180 degrees wrong. Or did you get it wrong? Just what is Carney saying in this speech? Can you understand it?
Well, I didn't get it wrong in my article yet. Part of it focused on a series of books on Libya, a Canadian intervention in Libya and Afghanistan, how they just followed the United States and were implicated in horrific atrocities. And the Canadian public was fed a lot of propaganda about those conflicts. And when Carney came in, he vowed to increase the military budget. You know, the Canadian military budget has been constantly expanding while social programs are being cut in Canada. And Carney, when he came in, he immediately increased called for a huge increase in the military budget. But yeah, he did kind of throw a bit of a 180 degree turn with his speech because, Canada is facing threats by Donald Trump and the United States, who said he was going to turn Canada into the 51st state, and they're kind of waging an economic war on Canada. So he's got to respond to that and stand up to the United States. And yeah, in some ways, I mean, Canada's military structure is still very much integrated with the United States. I mean, in his speech, he stated, of course, that the rules-based order was a sham. You know, he got a lot of publicity, and it really was something remarkable for a Canadian leader to say that, because Canada has just been going along, as I detail in my article, for a generation now, just going along with the U.S. and the rhetoric of the U.S. empire and framing most conflicts around the world in the way that the U.S. presents them. Although ironically, in Carney's speech, he kind of doubled down on the Ukraine and how that was a valuable mission. And, you know, he wasn't entirely changing the rhetoric with regard to conflicts around the world that Canada is supporting and can really be considered on the wrong side. But he was calling out the sham of the rule-based world order and the general bullying practices of the United States and wanting to distance Canada now from that. I mean, that was important that he said all that. But yeah, the way he framed certain conflicts is still, I think, highly problematic. And I mean, Canada is still committed to, for instance, supporting the can be considered neo-fascist Ukrainian government and other dubious conflicts around the world. You know, Carney is part of the Gaza Peace Board. That's an imperial body that Trump put in to run Gaza. The Gazans can't run their own affairs. I mean, it's a relic to the era of 19th century colonialism. So, and, you know, Carney is, you know, demonized the Venezuelan government and continues to do so. And I don't think he's backtracked on his expanded U.S., you know, military budget for Canada while he's, you know, he's governing a very right-wing way. You know, he's cutting social programs to fund that huge military budget, and they're funding military industry and technological development. And, you know, Canada's military system are integrated with the United States. So there's a dichotomy there. He's starting now to denounce U.S. bullying, but Canada, you know, Canadian weapons systems and Canadian military are assisting in U.S. military operations overseas. So he's got, you know, if he's a real progressive, he's going to have to really distance himself from the United States, cut Canada's military ties, and actually de-escalate the military budget and spend on social needs. But I don't think he's that progressive a leader. But again, I do agree it's important what he said at the summit. So,
as you say, we're more and more the Canadian forces over these last, I don't know, 50 years at least, become interoperable, as they say, with the American military. So it's not far-fetched to think that there were Canadian assets, either naval or aviation or even perhaps soldiers taking part in the actual raid itself. We don't know and we're not told, but it's certainly within the scope of Canada's arrangement with the American military.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is something, these books by Owen Schock, he's a young writer, I would highly recommend to listeners. They're very informative about Libya and Afghanistan and more broadly, yeah, about what you're describing, how Canada has military has become integrated with the U.S. military. And he's critical of even, you know, kind of heralded Canadian leader like Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who took some, you know, measures to assert Canadian autonomy vis-a-vis the U.S. Economically and nationalize, you know, oil in Alberta and stuff. But he went along, apart from Cuba, even Trudeau went along with a lot of U.S. foreign policy intervention, including like in Africa, and was supporting like, you know, Canadian mining interests. And so, you know, came out against, you know, socialist and Pan-Africanist leaders, for example, as one of the examples he gives in the book that I remember. And he also discusses, like, in the when John Diefenbaker in the late 50s, early 60s, when John Kennedy was president, you know, was weary about adding, you know, nuclear-armed weapons, you know, accepting, you know, nuclear warheads. You know, he was removed, and the Kennedy was against Diefenbaker and supported Lester Pearson, who was liberal but was much, you know, more pro-U.S. as far as, you know, trying to orient Canada and its foreign policy. So these books, yeah, give good historical perspective. And yeah, that's the situation. But I mean, you know, I think a lot of Canadians are very weary of the U.S. and U.S. foreign policy, and yet their country is very much integrated with it. And there's been a lot of propaganda in recent years, though, to justify, you know, Canadian involvement in conflicts, including like with Ukraine or Libya. The Canadian media is really as bad as the American media, and that's something these Schock books underscore. But I think, you know, Trump went so far, he really angered a lot of Canadians, that I think, you know, people are coming more out in the open in Canada and demanding that Canada, you know, distance themselves from the United States and prepare. I mean, its defense, if it's going to focus on the military spending, should concentrate on defending Canada from the United States. rather than, you know, sending the Canadian military into these shady operations like Venezuela, as you're describing.
Well, Owen Schock's book is Canada. His new book is Canada and NATO, The Myth of a Global Peacekeeper. I was talking to Eve Engler, I guess it was last year, about the book that he co-authored with Owen, Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, which is also a great read that I would recommend. Jeremy, you said that Carney was on the so-called Gaza board, or Trump's board of peace, or Gaza board of peace. I had heard that they had withdrawn from that and then were disinvited by Trump.
Okay.
Is that the latest? Okay, I didn't hear that.
Well, you might be correct. Yeah, I guess it may have been dated. Yeah, I read somewhere, but you're right. Maybe he's since removed himself from that.
Well, he was disinvited before. I don't know which came first, if it was, you know, quitting before you're fired, but Trump then issued some kind of disinvitation to Canada. He's allowed, though, that Putin join it. I'm not sure if that is an offer that was unilaterally made, or it's been accepted, or an invitation. Do you know? Are the Russians a part of this as well?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not up to date on that, exactly who's going to be included. But, I mean, in general, it's a disgrace. I mean, it's a relic back to the age of colonialism. And I mean, yeah, Russia doesn't always have a, you know, progressive foreign policy. And, you know, some of the attitudes of Putin toward the people of the Middle East are very regressive. I mean, Russia, I think Putin, that's why, you know, Putin initially wanted to establish a good relationship with the Bush administration, you know, in 2000 after 9/11, because Putin was intent on waging war on terror in Chechnya. And, you know, the Russians committed huge human rights abuses in Chechnya. And he was on board with Bush's war on terror. But then, you know, the U.S. started threatening Russia and meddling more in Ukraine and Georgia. And that, you know, pissed him off and raised alarm bells. But yeah, people shouldn't think that Putin was a progressive in any way. He may be justified in a lot of his actions vis-a-vis Ukraine. You know, he was provoked into it, as we discussed, and he's defending Russia in that case. But it doesn't mean he's always progressive. I mean, he's welcomed the new Syrian leader. He was just in Russia, I believe. The new Syrian leader, who's tied with Al-Qaeda and is now going after the Kurds, attacking the Kurdish population, as well as carrying out ethnic cleansing against the Shiite Alawites. And he's allowed Israel to expand its occupation. I mean, you know, Putin will act in what he perceives as Russian state interest, which is not always a moral position. So people shouldn't be under any illusions about that.
In your article, Jeremy, Canada follows U.S. lead in preparing for World War, you talk about the military budget and how much it has been expanded during just Carney's tenure. But that doesn't save him from getting the same epithet that was dropped on the head of our former Prime Minister Trudeau by the President of the United States as governor. He's referred to by Trump, especially lately, as Governor Carney. What's your comment on that diss?
Well, I think Trump is, you know, way off the spectrum. I don't think a lot of Americans, you know, Trump has very low support among the American population. He represents the far right, you know, jingoistic extreme of the country. And that, you know, is very off-putting behavior and has alarmed people around the world, including, you know, Canadian legitimately. So, I mean, you know, Trump is a national disgrace, disgracing the United States. I mean, there's calls to boycott the World Cup because of what Trump's doing, you know, with ICE, you know, killing American citizens and then trying to claim that they're domestic terrorists. So, you know, Canada has to respond to that. I mean, Carney owed his election to it. I think Canada was saved from Pierre Poilievre by Trump because, you know, Poilievre's rhetoric was too similar to Trump. So a Canadian wisely didn't vote him in. You know, I mean, Carney has this problem that I've highlighted some of the major ones already today. But, you know, he's doing some smart things, at least showing he's willing to stand up to the United States And it was a major breakthrough that he called the world-based order a sham. You know, that's what those of us on the so-called left have been saying and documenting in our writing for years. And now he's coming out and saying it adds more credibility to that critique. And the irony is that Canada was a key player in that, in a lot of these sham interventions and the hypocrisy relating their responsibility to protect. But at least he's called it out. It delegitimizes it, and it could pave the way for a better future. So certainly credit should be given where it's due.
But then he doesn't announce that Canada's military will be disengaging in any way. We're still supporting the Gaza genocide via America with weaponry and exports, and some directly to Israel. Still, there's a lot of rhetoric here, but I mean, I don't see a lot of beef, you know.
Exactly, and even the rhetoric. I read the speech, and you know, he mentioned Ukraine still as this great righteous cause, right. And you know, that's been thoroughly discredited, not just in our work, but you know, any literate person can find the evidence of Zelensky's brutal dictatorship of the neo-Nazis and the atrocities. You know, Eva Bartlett had an article today that about 10,000 civilians have been killed in eastern Ukraine by the Ukrainian military with U.S. and Canadian weapons. And Carney thinks this is great righteous cause. So, you know, this guy is a phony. And I mean, yeah, it's good to generally criticize the U.S., but yeah, he's not criticizing the specific intervention that Canada's very much involved with. And he doesn't seem to be altering course. You know, Canada is not pulling back its troops from any of these places. And what's disturbing also for Canadians, as I pointed out, was the huge military budget that he ordered a huge increase in the military budget, which was already out of whack compared to social spending. You know, Canada has had a lot of cuts, and the public has suffered. You know, I experienced this back in the 90s and early 2000s, constant cuts to schools and public services, while the military is grossly overfunded. So it's just mirroring the right-wing destructive policies in the United States. And it's similar to, you know, Obama-type liberal, who's really not a liberal at all and would have been a conservative in the 1950s. And that's what Carney is. I mean, he's a banker, you know, and he's not a real liberal. So, you know, Canadians don't really have much choice on the spectrum like in the United States when that's the liberal who's really a conservative. And then you have the NDP, which is another discussion of how they've embraced all these misguided or criminal, depending on how you frame them, foreign policy interventions. And now they're trying to sideline your friend Eve Engler as he tried to run to gain power in the party, and they're smearing him and trying to ostracize him when, you know, he's well informed, and he's the one who stood against these bankrupt interventions. So, you know, the political politics is still as screwed up as ever, both in Canada and the United States.
Well, they've succeeded in sidelining Eve now. As it turns out, they've disallowed his participation in the leadership race. Eva is also Canadian, but she's been living in Russia and working in eastern Ukraine for many years now. And during this conflict, she's been back and forth there. Her stuff can be found at ingaza.wordpress.com. And I just saw in that note, I saw the same one you did, I suspect. She says that she's moving to upscroll away from Twitter X, that there seems to be a great exodus underway just now from Twitter. Again, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio, and you're listening to me talk way too much, but I'm talking to Jeremy Kuzmarov today. And Jeremy, as I said, is the managing editor to Covert Action magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. And his latest is co-authored with friend of the show, Dan Kovalik, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Before I lose the thread entirely, Jeremy, you guys over at Covert Action are having your winter fundraiser. Do you want to mention that?
Sure, yeah. Please, you know, support investigative journalism. I mean, it's now, and critical political analysis. I mean, as we've been discussing, it's now more important than ever that people are well-informed, especially about foreign policy. You know, our media really does not cover it well at all, and a lot of the public is not well-informed and easily susceptible to propaganda and to just going along with these bankrupt foreign policies that are ultimately blowing back on their own societies, whether it's budget cuts in education or healthcare, whether it's the epidemic of mass violence, you know, soldiers who come back from these conflicts mentally deranged and carry out mass shootings. Yeah. I mean, this is blowing back on our own society. We've got to be better informed as a public about world affairs and demand better of our government. So Covert Action Magazine is trying to better educate people in North America and around the world about U.S. foreign policy and the American empire. So, you know, your support keeps us in business and can help fund, you know, we draw some reporters from different places around the world to give, you know, firsthand reports from countries impacted by U.S. and Canadian foreign policy intervention. So your funding will help pay for those reporters to continue reporting and gaining a wider audience with their important reporting.
Your other article, Special Forces Training Center at Fort Bragg, has evolved into murder, capital, and drug trafficking hub. When you talk about people driven, these soldiers, these special forces types especially, driven insane by some of the evil shit that they have to do, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. And it's an excellent book by Seth Harp, I think, who's an editor of Rolling Stone magazine. And he profiled a group of special forces who are based in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and Billy Levine was the name of one of them. And yeah, they had been on the front line of the war on terror, trained as assassins, and they were just totally, lost their humanity basically overseas. They were trained as killers. They lost any empathy for humanity, and they came back and just continued, to behave in an uncivilized way. And, you know, one of the friends said, you know, like this guy Levine, he was dating a woman and her boyfriend was somewhat abusive. But, you know, instead of dealing with that in the court system, Levine went out and executed him. And then she said, you know, he only knows how to deal with problem by killing people. That's what he learned overseas. And, you know, these guys were, him and his network were involved in a huge drug trafficking operation. They were, they're huge domestic violence. You know, Fort Bragg has very, very high levels of domestic violence. They often take it out on their wives or significant other, their aggression. And Levine ended up killing his own best friend. They, he had a daughter and this guy, fellow special forces, they took their kids, it was supposed to be a fun spring break trip to Disneyland, and they got drunk and high at night. And then they started fighting, and he executed his best friend in front of his own son or daughter. And then he ended up being murdered, I think as retribution. But, you know, he never faced justice because the book shows how the criminal justice system in Fort Bragg is rigged to protect these special forces officers who commit all kinds of crimes. And, yeah, there's huge domestic violence and also rapes. And the book goes into this case of a woman who was raped just at a party. I think it was a party for some special forces groups. And she met a special forces officer who raped her at the party, forced her in the back or something, raped her. And then he got off, because the criminal justice system favored these soldiers and made sure they didn't go to prison. So there's this culture of impunity and just violence toward women, drug trafficking and killing. And it shows how, and that's the irony of the Venezuela. Trump claimed he's going to fight the drug traffic, and he's kidnapping the Venezuelan president, who's supposedly head of this big drug cartel that actually doesn't exist. It's not an actual cartel. It's a group of some corrupt military officers who wear a certain patch on their uniform, but they're not a cartel, and they have no connection with Maduro, who actually went after the big drug cartel in Venezuela, Tren de Aragua. But anyway, this book showed that the biggest drug trafficking gangs are in the United States, on U.S. military bases, and they got their drugs from Afghanistan. The book has several chapters showing how the Fort Bragg drug cartel of all these depraved special forces officers got their supply from Afghanistan. You know, they all served in Afghanistan. And it discusses how Stanley McChrystal, the top special forces general, placed this warlord named Akunzada as head of the Helmand province, and McChrystal himself bragged that he was head of a huge drug cartel. And the book goes into the corruption of Karzai, Hamid Karzai, the U.S. Puppet that they imposed after 9/11, and his brother Ahmed Wali Karzai, and all these people funded and supported by the U.S. and installed by them were, big-time drug traffickers and fueled a boom in the drug traffic, which had been suppressed by the Taliban. And then it was the supply was going to Fort Bragg, and that was a major drug trafficking hub in the United States. So if the U.S. government is serious about fighting the drug trade, they'll start at home and go after the racket at Fort Bragg. And there's a connection with the CIA there that the book goes into, and past CIA officers who are running operation out of Fort Bragg. So if it was a real war on drugs, it would target Fort Bragg and arrest and break up the cartel there instead of this phony war on drugs in Venezuela, which is really designed. The whole operation there is to steal Venezuela's oil. And, Stephen Miller was very open about that. So it's not actually controversial what I'm discussing, but it is maybe suppressed in the mainstream media. And, I mean, Mark Carney's not at the intellectual level that he understands any of this. Or if he does, he's not going to say anything. So
no, well, for sure. The book, Seth Harp's book, is The Fort Bragg Cartel, Drug Trafficking and Murder in the Special Forces. We're fast out of time, Jeremy. Your website, again, covertactionmagazine.com. The articles, Canada Follows U.S. Lead in Preparing for World War, and Special Forces Training Center at Fort Bragg has evolved into murder capital and drug trafficking hub. There's much, much more at covertactionmagazine.com. Blow the whistle on U.S. imperialism and help them out. Thanks for coming on again.
My pleasure, yeah.
After the break, I'll be back with Chris Gilbert, and he's in Caracas. Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago. Jakarta. Helsinki. Cape Town. Sao Paulo. Manchester. Bangalore. And somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Mark Carney's call for the middle power solidarity in the face of America's unhinged hegemonic impulses carries with it two implicit caveats, the most glaring of those made in the aftermath of the lethal kidnapping raid against Caracas and Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro. When first made aware of the clearly illegal attack against that country's sovereignty in the person of the president, Carney responded saying, quote, Canada has not recognized the illegitimate regime of Nicolas Maduro since it stole the 2018 election, adding the Canadian government therefore welcomes the opportunity for freedom, democracy, peace, and prosperity for the Venezuelan people. A brave new order indeed. Chris Gilbert is professor of political studies at the Universidad Bolivariana de Venezuela in Caracas. He's too an author and contributing editor at Monthly Review and co-hosts the Marxist educational program Escuela de Cuatros. Gilbert's latest book is Commune or Nothing, Venezuela's Communal Movement and Its Socialist Project. Welcome back to the program, Chris.
Happy to be here.
Well, now, Chris, Venezuela and the fate of its kidnapped president and his wife has fallen largely off the media map up here. What's going on in Caracas right now? What's the mood in the country generally?
Well, one thing I would say is that the from the beginning, people here responded with a great deal of calmness and serenity, and including determination. So from we were attacked approximately 3.5 weeks ago. And this was, of course, as you said, a tremendous insult to the sovereignty of the country and also a complete violation of any notion of international law. But from the very beginning, the government and the people responded fearlessly, and with a great sense of order. And I think that really shows the solidness of the revolutionary process here. And when I say solidness of the revolutionary process, I mean the combination of the people and the leadership, because that's what a revolution is. So we saw how the revolution quickly recomposed itself. Delcy Rodriguez, as the acting president, defied Trump, saying that this isn't a colony of any country. And the military showed its loyalty, appearing on the side of Delcy Rodriguez. So then, of course, we saw the people come to the streets defending the revolution. There was a very spontaneous manifestation, demonstration on the first day in support of the government. And then the demonstrations got bigger and bigger every day, with marches by communards, indigenous people, women,